Calling to order the 1,359th meeting of the Metro Board of Directors. Our first item on the agenda is the public comment period. Our first public comment is from Alan Haywood. Alan, are you here? We do have a fairly large number of people commenting today, so each person has 2 minutes to speak.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm Alan Haywood. I live in Washington, and I'm here today to talk about safety, not strange bag safety or escalator safety, but just not getting your head bashed in on Metro safety. Back on Sunday, January 2nd, 7:15 at night, I'm waiting for my train at L'Enfant Plaza, reading a book and waiting for my train, and a group of teenagers just attacked me and started beating me for no reason. No one did anything, not the bystanders, no one from Metro, no one. And I'm here today so that you've got a name and a face to put with this story, not just a case report or an incident number, but a person, and so that you can see me. I mean, I'm not old, I'm not young, I'm not elderly, I'm not frail, I'm a large, healthy adult man. This happened to me. It could happen to anyone, anytime, any station. And you could leave this meeting and go to Judiciary Square and wait for your train and have your head bashed in. I mean, I hope it doesn't happen, but it could, because it did, and it happened to me. And the people in this room are in the position to do something about it, to catch the people that did this and to make improvements to safety so that, you know, there's a lesser chance this happens to someone else. And I'm certainly not the expert, but again, the people in this room should be and have access to those who are. But what occurred to me from what happened and where and how it happened is, you know, cameras could help, more and better cameras and useful surveillance. People assume we're living in a Big Brother kind of world, but apparently that there's not many or useful cameras, and the footage they tell me that there was, you know, not of any use. That seems to be one thing that could be helpful and could be looked into and addressed. Another one's containment. I mean, if I were to snatch someone's purse right now in front of all of you, it seems like I would be stopped at that door or the next door or the front door or before I got to the street. And I know Metro's different, but it seems like it could be contained. And the other's communication. And I was told after the fact by a Metro employee that she saw the whole thing from the other platform, couldn't get there, and was forbidden from using her phone. I don't know if that's the case or just her understanding of the policy, but it seems like there's more that could be done there. So I'll appreciate anything y'all can do to follow up on this and to hope that this never happens to anyone else. Thank you.
Mr. Haywood, I think we all feel exactly the way you do, that we hope this never happens to anyone else. And we do know that our chief of police is working hard to look at what happened in this instance and see if we can find better ways to prevent these kinds of things from happening in the future. Chief, do you want to make any comments at all about this?
Yes, Mr. Haywood, we certainly do appreciate you coming forward, working with the police department to allow us the opportunity to the best of our ability find out who did this terrible act to you. And I think that you found that we have reached out to you and we've been working diligently with you. We've probably met with you a couple of times to go back to the locations. We do believe that we have a search warrant that we're going to execute, and hopefully in executing that search warrant, we'll have information that will further solve this particular case.
Thank you for coming, Mr. Haywood. Thomas Nephew is next. Thomas.
Hi, I'm Thomas Nephew with the Montgomery County Civil Rights Coalition. We have 700 petition signatures here, all urging you to adopt the recommendations to halt bag searches and conduct a public evaluation of their real effectiveness. We have a number of concerns with the program. Here are a few. First, Chief Taborn has stated that persons who refuse bag searches will be watched or observed, including by the FBI or Department of Homeland Security. This undermines the transit user's right to refuse the search, a right unconditionally affirmed and indeed required by the McQuaid v. Kelly ruling in the Constitution. By running an illegal program, Chief Taborn exposes WMATA to litigation. Second, we question whether the program is adequately overseen or overseen at all. We can't take on faith that Metro Transit Police aren't profiling Metro riders. Only independent oversight could verify that. Third, just as with the New York program, where the benefits of this program are overstated, we're asked to assume that attackers are unable to adjust to a ridiculous defense strategy. Too much credence has been given to security specialists peddling exotic, expensive services, often while sensible routine needs like radios go unmet. We're not against security, we're against pretend security, especially when it comes at the expense of real liberty. These searches do nothing to make us more secure, yet erode our civil liberties. Please consider and adopt the RAC recommendations. Thank you. And I have a list of names, petition signatures here for whoever wants to take them.
Thank you, Mr. Nephew. We have a number of people that say they would like to speak on this subject, and as you have noted also, the Riders Advisory Council will have a recommendation that will be coming to the board. I would suggest that we wait until we've heard all of those, and we've heard also the Riders Advisory Council recommendation, then have comments then as opposed to individually, unless there's an overwhelming need by some board member to speak now. I'm sorry? Yeah. Okay, thank you, Mr. Nephew.
You should take the petitions.
Thank you, lawyer. Our next speaker, again on the subject of bag check, is Sue Udry.
Hi, thanks very much for allowing us to comment. And I'll try to keep my comments short because I know a lot of people are going to express the same concerns. I did actually speak to you all about a year and a half ago when the bag program was first announced. I'd like to thank the Rider Advisory Council for holding a special meeting to allow riders to express our concerns, and I urge the board to listen closely and adopt the Rider Advisory Council recommendations on the bag search procedure. And I'd also like to ask you, before you further implement this program that surely will lead to lawsuits, to ask tough questions. How will this program really prevent a terrorist attack? I know that Metro is using machines that cost what we understand to be $25,000 each, and they can't detect every kind of explosive. Seems like they really only can detect a messy terrorist because it's just a swab of the outside of the bag. And don't just accept vague allusions to layers of security or I can't tell you that. We really need, before we're going to adopt a program that really does disrespect riders and treat every rider as if they're a potential criminal, I think that Metro needs to be sure that there are solid reasons for adopting this program. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Murphy. Our next speaker is Pat Elder. I'm sorry, that was Ms. Udry. Pat, go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Pat Elder, and I am a co-founder of the DC Bill of Rights Coalition. There are unintended consequences to your bag search policy. You're alienating a significant number of riders who feel their constitutional rights are being violated. I speak for them. George Mason, the author of the Bill of Rights, said, "There is a passion natural to the mind of man, especially a free man, which renders him impatient of restraint." Impatience is a mild term. I feel threatened. You are helping to create a revolutionary class, and with it, the disintegration of the order you profess to defend. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Elder, and Gail Murphy. Gail? Is Gail Murphy here? If not, Johnny Barnes. Johnny Barnes does not appear to be here. Yvonne Smith. Ms. Smith? Okay.
Thank you very much. My name is Yvonne Smith. I'm the president of the Recovery Group, a nonprofit of persons with disabilities in Washington, D.C. I live in Ward 8, east of the river. I'm a homeowner, and I am a rider. I am heavily dependent on Metro, bus, and subway. I shop. I go to see my doctors. I take all of my recreation. I am your customer, and so are a lot of my peers. I wanted to bring up 4 points. Number one, we have a new smart trip for people who are disabled. Unfortunately, you can only load 2 weekly passes on it. Many persons who are having a fixed income, whether they're on disability or seniors, want to be able to load their cards up once a month, and that's not possible now. Also, the disability offices and the Metro Access offices are not really accessible. You have to go through a gauntlet of push this button, push that button in order to do, to get business taken care of, and then maybe someone might call you back. I would like to see the office in Anacostia's hours expanded. That is where you have probably the most ridership in the city. We're a place where we don't have taxi cabs. Also, I would hope that the board would look into having the connector buses to run up and down Martin Luther King Avenue, and also to help connect Washington, D.C. with the neighboring suburbs where residents of my area would be able to find jobs in neighboring Virginia. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. I did notice staff members taking very careful notes about your statements, and I'm sure they'll be looking into many of those suggestions very shortly.
Okay, thank you very much.
Next person is Kurt Euler.
Good afternoon. My name is Kurt Euler. I'm an attorney working in Virginia. I'm here to talk about the board's autonomy as it relates to the bag search issue. A lot of people here have talked about the substance of it, the effect, its effect on riders, whether or not it's a good use of resources, its civil rights issues, but there is a threat to this board's autonomy laced in this policy. And what I'm talking about is a few years ago when they first considered this policy, there were objections to this policy, and they decided to put a hold on it because this board was simply not ready to go there at that time. Now in the present time, how has this policy come into place? It's come into place by it being announced to you. There weren't hearings, there weren't discussions, you weren't presented with evidence. You didn't have the ability to have a rational, thoughtful discussion on the pros and cons, and after all that, reach a determination that this was the right way to go. That decision was taken away from you. And that should be concerning to you as a board and this board's autonomy, the threat to your autonomy. One of the basic hallmarks of our republic, as opposed to another form of government, is civilian control. The United States Armed Forces are under the control of a civilian, President Barack Obama. Each of the state National Guards are under the control of a civilian, the governors. And we have legislatures. These are all elected civilians to represent us. The police are not elected. They are appointed. And they didn't come to ask you for permission. They simply told you the way it was going to be. And I simply don't know how we can claim to live in a democracy, a republic, society, when that's the situation at bar. I beg this council to reverse this policy if for no other reason than it's a threat to your autonomy. Because if they can do this on this occasion for this policy, then you have to ask the question, where does it stop? When will this board become simply a figurehead? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mueller. Again on bag searches, Karen O'Keefe.
Hello and good afternoon. I'm Karen O'Keefe, an attorney and a member of the DC Bill of Rights Coalition. I'm here to ask you to heed the Riders Advisory Council's recommendation to immediately halt the bag searches. Please consider better ways to use police resources to improve public safety while respecting civil liberties. In 2008, the council asked the WMATA Board of Directors to hold public hearings on the bag search program and to put a halt on it in the meantime. that hadn't been implemented at that time. Unfortunately, the board ignored that recommendation. Now, 2 years later, a search policy has been suddenly implemented with no public discussion of alternatives, no hearings and no vote by the board, and without any specific credible threat. In the meantime, there are assaults and injuries on Metro. We all want to be safe, but the searches are not the best use of limited resources, and they are offensive to the freedoms that this country professes to value. Anyone with nefarious intent could simply go to one of the 80 or more stations where there wouldn't be bag searches going on, or they could just wait and come back later. Meanwhile, people who are just trying to get to work will be treated like criminals. Even a short delay can result in a missed train and then a missed bus that might only come every 40 minutes. I disagree with the Second Circuit decision in McWade, and I hope that a court here would rule differently. But today, the decision is not in a court's hands, it's in your hands. As the 11th Circuit said when it found that peaceful protesters should not be subject to metal detectors, September 11th, 2001, already a day of immeasurable tragedy, cannot be the day that liberty perished in this country. Please stand up for our liberties. Address safety issues in an effective manner and without treating us like criminals. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. O'Keefe. Jim Harper, same subject.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Jim Harper, a Capitol Hill resident, happy rider of the D6. I also work at the Cato Institute in Washington, D.C., where I study counterterrorism and privacy, among other things. I think some of the speakers that have gone before have done a good job touching on the risk management issues, but the basic problem, I think, with the bag search policy is the risk transfer problem. That is, protecting one area just transfers the risk to another. So at a very high cost in dollars and privacy, you're really just pushing the problem around. Happily, other security layers, the people of the district, the MPD, on out to international investigation, are providing good security against the threats that bag searches purport to protect against. I want to talk a little bit about one of the most distant layers and some of the audiences actually around the world that are watching what you're doing. Terrorism is a strategy that is designed to get us, the victim state, if you will, to overreact. And it's very important for us not to overreact. And a bag search policy is an unfortunate example of overreaction. They want to instill fear in us. They want to knock us off our game, these kinds of things. It's very, very important not to do that. So think of two audiences that are watching this policy. One is the domestic U.S. audience, the district audience in particular. Are you sending them signals of fear or confidence? Fear or confidence. Bag searches signal fear, just like we get at the airport. Confidence is something you say when you deny this policy, and say, we're safe enough. We can't have perfect security, but we're safe enough that we don't need to harass our citizens. The second audience is an international audience, people who might potentially participate in terrorism. If they see us doing bag searches here, they feel like they've got us on the run, and they're empowered, they're energized. More people go to them because they think they can stick their finger in the eye of the United States. So denying bag searches has a strategic benefit that redounds around the world. The U.S.'s capital city should refuse bag searches as a message of indomitability and pride in our civil liberties. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Harper. Let me say again that we will still hear from the Writers Advisory Council, and the board is holding comment until after that on this issue. Michael Sindran.
Good afternoon, all. Michael Sindran, disabled veteran, served our country more than most. As you are aware, Mr. Benjamin, I wrote you a letter back on October 2nd. I've since readdressed it to Mr. Sarles. I'll pass it up at the conclusion of my testimony. It outlines with particularity and specificity a number of issues that remain pending and acted upon. One, the extension of time each month for public comment. 2 minutes is just unacceptable. Chief Taborn, in 2 minutes, what could you do? Probably nothing, or this board couldn't. The public is the lifeblood of Ramada. All right, and 2 minutes every 3 months is just unacceptable, Councilman Wells. Two, the 31 fare cards by Sarah Wilson. That's my property, Chief. That's theft. Let's get it back or remunerated accordingly. The Fair Cards by John Cato, which was on the record before you, Councilman Graham, Mr. Graham, and you hail yourself as a civil rights activist, yet under your watch, we've got this illegal bag search. And I hope, Councilman Wells, you take to heart the words of Martin King, when the rights of one are violated, the rights of all are endangered. There's the four Metro checks for Mr. Lawson, who says they only have a value of $2. They didn't get it back to me. Just because Metro says something doesn't mean it's so. I want an independent outside auditor to take a look at them. Guess what? He can't find them, which means I should be compensated accordingly. Chief Taborn, that's a crime. My property just withheld unauthorizedly. I've asked for the pink backpack about security camera out in front, outside of the sales office. My understanding is there's not one there. This is a heavily trafficked building. We have them everywhere else. Why not there? And that would tell us who took that pink backpack. We've got the Smart Trip benefit. You have to be transferred to my Smart Trip card. And Angel Cabrera has yet to act on that issue. Mr. Lawson went to great pains with a rhetoric of sweet ears but sour in the belly. I've got a response, which I'm going to pass off to you, GM Charles. And I've also made you aware, Chief, of somebody impersonating a police officer at Judiciary Square. It may have very well been when our first public testifier indicated that he was accosted and assaulted. So I hope you take this very seriously. I've got the comment card here, and I'll pass it up to Mr. Sarles. So hopefully some action will be taken. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sindrin. This brings us to the close of the public comment period. We now have approval of the agenda. The agendas are before you. There are a couple of changes which are in bold on the blue sheet. Unless there is objection, I will consider the agenda approved without objection. Any comments or changes? Okay, then the agenda is approved without objection. The minutes of December 16th, that board meeting, are before you. Are there additions, corrections, modifications, changes? Without objection, the minutes are approved as presented.
Mr. Chairman.
I'm sorry. Ms. Hines.
I would ask that I be listed as abstaining.
On the minutes?
On the minutes. I was not here. I was not a member of the board.
Well, since we didn't have a vote.
Sorry. I thought you said without objection.
Without objection. You're...
And so.
Okay. Will the secretary... show that appropriately, please. We have, at this point, four new board members, which is, I think, the largest number of new board members we have ever had. And we are going to bring all of them up together and swear them in as new board members. So if you would join me in the center up there, we will do this. Administer the oath of office. This is very complicated, so please listen carefully and repeat carefully. I state your name. That's good. Do hereby solemnly swear that I will support the Constitution of the United States and that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance. To state your jurisdiction. Okay. That was a good one. And support the Constitution and laws thereof. And that I will, to the best of my skill and judgment, diligently and faithfully, without partiality or prejudice, execute the office. You now get another choice of either principal or alternate director of the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority. And you did the hardest part, best. Thank you. Welcome to all of you. on behalf of all of the members. This went out. Okay. On behalf of all of the members of the board, let me welcome our four new members. This is, as I said, the largest change we've ever had at one time in the board. And it's an opportunity for us to hear a new set of views, a new set of voices, and a different viewpoint. We welcome that opportunity, and we are sure that the board will be enriched by your presence and your participation. Thank you for joining us. Our next item on the agenda is the appointment of a general manager and chief executive officer. You have before you a resolution
It's there.
Okay. It does not appear to be in line. That's okay. I don't need it. this resolution appoints Richard Sarles as our chief executive officer and our general manager. I would entertain a motion to appoint Mr. Sarles. Moved by Mr. Downey, seconded by Ms. Hewlett. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed say no. We are then happy to welcome Mr. Sarles as our new chief executive officer. And Mr. Sarles, if you would join me at the front, we will try another oath of office. Repeat after me. I, Richard Sarles, do hereby solemnly swear that I will support the Constitution of the United States and the provisions of the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority Compact. That's a hard one. And that I will faithfully and impartially discharge and perform all duties incumbent upon me as general manager and chief executive officer of the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority, according to the best of my ability. So help me God. Thank you, Mr. Sarles, and we are very happy to have you with us. I'm very pleased that we have taken this action, and I'm very pleased to have a true and tested leader with extensive CEO experience as our new CEO of Washington Metro. Richard Sarles has demonstrated his competence, he's demonstrated his ability to get a difficult job done both here at Metro and throughout his career. As we went through our search for a new CEO, we owed it to our customers, to our employees, to our stakeholders, to conduct the most expansive search we possibly could. And we did that. We did an international search. We undertook 6 months of deliberative review of many candidates. And as a result, we found many excellent candidates with exceptional background and with experience in the area of transportation and public and areas in public transportation and beyond. As we looked at those candidates, as we talked to those candidates, as we as a board reviewed all of the people who had come before us, we determined that Richard Searles has demonstrated what we really are looking for. From the minute he walked in the door, he put safety first. He began turning around our safety culture and worked to ingrain safety and the safety culture in every part of the organization. He did not come in as a caretaker, as an interim general manager. He took on the challenges. He took on the tough work. He took on implementing every single one of the recommendations of the National Transportation Safety Board. We have ahead of us a very big job in rehabilitating our rail system. He has already pushed forward on rebuilding Metro, on doing extensive track work, on buying new equipment, such as our 7,000 series rail cars and our new buses. Richard Searles has deep technical expertise. He knows the nuts and bolts. He knows how to put the pieces in place to rebuild the entire system. His leadership style is deliberate and methodical, and he has an unwavering focus with attention to detail. He's a champion of the customers, and he doesn't give up on trying to fix some of our more frustrating service challenges. He commits to a job, and then he produces what he has committed to on time and with quality. He listens to our Metro employees in the shops, in the stations, wherever he is, wherever they are. And because of that, he has garnered the respect of those both inside and outside Metro. He's also a daily rider of the system, and he's committed to improving it for all of us. We don't have a new rail system. It doesn't look like it was 25 years ago, bright and shiny. Our rail system is 34 years old. It needs major rehabilitation to get it back to where it was once upon a time. And the way that system is designed means that as we work at doing that, we will inconvenience our riders. We all ask that as the new chief executive officer takes on this very important task of trying to bring the system back to where it was, that our riders be patient with us and give, and we hope as a result of that, to give them the kind of system that they've come to expect. But it's going to be a long haul, and we expect that there will be a reward at the end of that long haul in the shape of better service for all of us. That may not be evident to our customers who confront weekend outages, but it will continue to be a struggle, and it's a necessary struggle, and we have found a leader who will get that all done. Over the 10 months that Mr. Searles has been here, he's partnered with the board, he's stabilized Metro, and he's set a new path. I personally am confident in Mr. Searles' ability to keep us on the path of progress, to continually improve safety and service. I've enjoyed working with Rich over the past 10 months and look forward to a continued partnership over the coming 3 years, if I'm on the board that long. Are there any other people who wish to comment? Ms. Hudgens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Searles, I want to thank you for accepting this offer to be a long-term general manager here at the WMATA organization. You have demonstrated your skill and your commitment to our region, and we are fortunate to have your commitment for the long term. Mr. Benjamin has spoken to your excellent skill and the accomplishments that you've made during your 10 months. I would like to speak to the commitment that I think we as a board must make with you in order to ensure that we have a strong partnership in going forward, that your work has been a work that has been focused on safety, on reliability, and looking to have the best opportunity in managing this organization financially. I believe that it's our responsibility to work as a partner with you as a board in not only recognizing what you consider your major priorities, but that we as a board work with you on our priorities. I think that going forward, we look for the opportunity to work with you and your leadership team in developing a strategic plan that is a plan for not only our short-term, but for our long-term future. You've had the support of our customers, and you've had the support of the employees. And I think as we work together with both the employees and the customers, that we also incorporate the need of our role as partners with our external stakeholders. And that we remember that communication for us will be communication well with you, as well as those others that are integral to this organization. I look forward to working with you. We have 4 new members of this board, and to me, it's an opportunity that lies ahead for us. Rather than us needing to concentrate on the challenges, I think we're well prepared to go forward to deal with all those challenges as real opportunities for Metro. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Yule.
Yes, I would echo the comments of both the chairman and Ms. Hudgens, and certainly from a different perspective, simply congratulate the new CEO on his position and certainly his continuation here with us at the authority. But the different perspective would be simply from those who are not inside the infrastructure or here at Metro, but from folks whom Richard Sarles had come in contact with, and in terms of being the face, the interim face of Metro for the past 10 months, the elected officials from throughout the metropolitan region, local elected officials, state officials, members of different boards and organizations, and just the business community in general. And many of those folks spoke very highly of you, and then either individually or collectively to board members encouraged us to seriously consider you. They begged us to even ask you to apply. And certainly, as you well know, I did not approach you to do so, but I was surprised that you were certainly in the mix as a finalist. But we, as has been stated, we certainly look forward to our continued partnership and working relationship with you, albeit the challenges that we all face. But we're up for the task, and we know that you are, so we're pleased to have you on board.
Thank you, Mr. McKay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to add my comments and support as well. First, I was proud to represent Virginia in the search committee that interviewed many of the candidates. Mr. Downey served. You served, Mr. Chairman. I also want to thank Mr. Albert for his service on our committee. We interviewed a number of people. We searched high and low, internationally, nationally. And one of the things that, you know, I took great pride in seeing was the amount of interest in serving this agency. The amount of people who wanted to come to Washington and help this industry and this authority, recognizing it as the crown jewel in the transit world, in the United States in particular. And those folks saw this as service. Rich sees this as service, and our riders benefit from that. The committee, when we began our process, Rich was not a candidate. When we ended the process, Rich was a candidate, and I was very glad to see that. In Rich, we know what we've got. We've got somebody who, in short time, garnered the support of many, many folks. Mr. Yule alluded to a number of them before, but I can't tell you how many times people approached me through the process and said, you would be crazy if you didn't pick Rich Sarles to be the permanent general manager. He might be crazy to agree to do it, but you would be crazy if you didn't pick him. And the truth is, I thought a lot about that and agreed with them. I've never seen somebody in short order turn around the confidence of employees, the confidence of customers, in an environment where you don't get thanked very often, in a job where you don't get thanked very often. I think that's an incredible testament to the general manager that we have. Rich, we all have confidence in you. The board is confident in your leadership. We've seen you in action, and frankly, you are absolutely the right person at the right time for this authority, and we look forward to working with you.
Mr. Acosta.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and congratulations to you, Mr. Sarles, for your appointment. I think you'll be a terrific CEO. I was really thrilled to see your name on the list. I was quite surprised, but I was thrilled to see your name on the list because I thought over watching you work over the last 10 months, you certainly have stepped up to the plate. You made some very significant reforms to our system. I also think your attention to detail and your focus on execution is going to be critical to this authority over the next few years. We have some major challenges ahead of us, ranging from compliance with the NTSB recommendations, our focus on safety, the execution of our capital program, focus on customer service, and some very important decisions about how we use our resources, our very limited resources, to provide the most efficient and effective and most customer-friendly service to our ridership. We're going to hit some very difficult times, but I also think you're very capable and you're going to do a great job in terms of getting us, steering us through some very choppy waters over the next couple of years. But I think, again, you have my full support, and I look forward to working with you over the next few years.
Mr. Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As Mr. McKay said, I also served on the search committee, and we did have a wide range of very qualified candidates, and we were almost down to the point of making a choice when Mr. Sarles, I think very correctly, said, I would like to be considered for this job, and that was the basis of a selection. He wanted to be considered. He was considered. He was measured against others, but our confidence is here that he is the one that can do the job that needs doing now. As many of you know, I've worked with Mr. Sarles many times in many different roles, when we were junior players at a very small transit agency, to a time when I sat on his board, to a time where I worked with him on some major capital projects. He is a person who can get it done and get done the job we need to get done now, which is restoring the condition, the performance, the safety of the system to the level that it needs to be, that its employees can feel they are doing their jobs well, and that our customers will feel they are getting the service that they need. And that can become the platform from which we can only grow upwards. I'm looking forward to working with you for the next several years.
Ms. Hewlett.
Thank you. I think I would like to agree with all the comments that have been said thus far, because they're all accurate, Mr. Sarles. So let me start by saying congratulations, and follow that up with a strong, resounding thank you for stepping up. You've heard much about the quality of the candidates that we've had both nationally and internationally, but sometimes I'm glad that we were able to see the tremendous talent that we had right underneath our nose. And sometimes that gets lost in the real world. But in this instance, while it was not our attention from the beginning, you know, the way you approach this position, not as a placeholder or a caretaker, but you were very methodical. I mean, you are a very low-key, but very strong, methodical, consummate professional. And I think we are all very, very impressed with the way you have handled it, the support you have garnered from not only our employees, the way you have, the concern that you have for our customers. I think you've been a phenomenal leader in the short time, and I'm glad that we had the opportunity to consider you, and we're so glad that you said thank you. You have tremendous follow-through, tremendous competence, and your work ethic, and you're a low-key person, but you're a low-key professional who gets the job done. You are methodical. You stay focused. You stay on track. You do not get sidetracked, and you continue to get the job done. It's what you see is what you get. You exude tremendous integrity, and for that, I for one, support you. You have my support. and you have my confidence. And thank you very, very much for stepping up, and I look forward to working with you.
Ms. Hines.
Well, as one of the newbies here today, I am so pleased to hear the comments from those who've worked with you over the last 10 years. As someone who came into this at the end and got to meet the finalists, I think that what impressed me the most, Mr. Sarles, was how data-driven you are and how much this organization is looking carefully at everything that it does. I had inklings of that in my service on the Northern Virginia Transportation Commission, where we were getting to see some of the vital signs reports. But in fact, that attention to measurement and to public accountability and transparency, I believe is part of what will help Metro return to the days when everyone knew it was reliable and safe and nobody questioned, because I think that's where we're going to go. Your focus in our interviews on the key next steps, sort of the next six months of things that need to happen, was clear and inspiring, I would say, especially in the way that you approach talking about what would need to happen with employees in order to bring this agency back to where it has been. I think all of us sitting here and everybody in the region understands that our success as a region depends on Metro, on WMATA, on our buses and our trains. And the fact that we're looking holistically across all of that gives me great hope for the future. So I am pleased to be able to support you today.
Ms. Porter.
I want to associate myself with all of the positive things that my colleagues have said about this appointment, and I very much support the selection that the board has made. I think the wisdom of the selection is also attested to by the very positive public response that there has been to this decision. And I also, as another newbie, I think I can probably say this without any immodesty, that I was also very impressed with the board's process in recruiting candidates and making this selection. I was very pleased to see the level of concern, the level of effort, the level of thoughtfulness that went into the process, developing the process itself, and in making the final decision. So I want to commend Mr. Sarles, but I'd also like to commend my colleagues and on the process that you put in place and the amount of care and concern that you put into it.
Mr. Downs.
When your name first appeared in the paper.
There you go.
There you go. When your name first appeared in the paper, a mutual friend called and said, "Why the hell does he want to do that?" I said, "Well, you have to call Rich, but I think it's because he knows he can make a difference here, and he loves the industry." You'll answer that question yourself at some point. The other thing that I wanted to say was that I was incredibly impressed at the unanimity of the board, not only in your selection, because sometimes that's a paper unanimity. In this case, it was true unanimity. And there was a unanimity as well about the intent, maybe for the first time, that there is a true and genuine partnership between this board and the CEO. That partnership can grow, I think, with your full participation. The last thing that impressed me was that a number of managers here in the authority said, "There's hope now." Thank you.
Mr. Searles, you now have an opportunity to speak and to give us your report.
Well, thank you all for those very kind comments. And I appreciate the vote of confidence that you have given me. And it's truly a privilege to lead America's transit system. And it's also a privilege to represent the 10,000 employees, men and women of Metro, with whom I share a commitment to both public transit and public service. I came to Metro as an interim general manager simply wanting to help out. We have made progress over the last 10 months, and I stress the word we, because it's taken a lot of hard work and commitment from many people to get us launched in the right direction. From the partnerships with the board and executive leadership, to the frontline staff operating the trains, the buses, serving the Metro Access customers. It has taken a team effort to lay the groundwork for improving safety, reliability, and financial stability. Besides the members of the Metro family, we have been fortunate to have the support of the region's elected officials, including our congressional delegation, members of the business community, and oversight groups such as the NTSB and the TOC, and our very own customers, who have shown great patience and understanding as we've taken the needed steps to improve. Over the last 10 months, I've seen what we can do by working together, but even more so, I see what is possible for the future, which is why I'm here today, really. We're putting building blocks in place, making safety investments, improving our tracks and rail system, putting new buses into service, expanding staff training, and designing rail cars. While it may not be immediately evident, and there are inconveniences along the way, we are literally building a new metro system for our customers and employees. With a 40-year transportation career and as a transit rider for over 60 years, starting out when I was a young boy, I could not pass up the opportunity to stay here. Just as transportation has been a constant in my life, I've also been guided by the Athenian Oath, which I have always tried to live up to. And while it comes from ancient Greece, it can never go out of fashion. It is simply a commitment to leave this place better than I found it, which is my pledge to everyone here at Metro. When I look back on the progress we have made, the move towards new 7,000 series cars, the capital management program, the escalator rehab and replacement program, creation of the vital signs report, the massive state of good repair efforts now taking place on the system, I'm struck not only by the effective leadership of the team in this room, but more importantly by the men and women who are working so hard around the system. Even so, we still have a big job ahead, and I want to talk today about how we will move Metro forward with a combined commitment to safety, reliability, and financial stability while adopting the fourth cornerstone of improving customer service. First, we will continue our unwavering focus on establishing a safety-first culture, including completion of outstanding NTSB recommendations, continuing all roadway worker protection and frontline supervisory training, and addressing corrective actions from the TOC. Importantly, I and the executive leadership team will be actively expanding our engagement with local safety committees and other field initiatives, advancing a close call reporting program with our labor partners, and moving forward on the next level of safety programs arising out of the safety survey and other recommendations. With respect to system service and reliability, we'll implement the recommendations that arose from the external assessment of our escalators and elevators. We have strengthened the leadership of that department and are undertaking further training, improving quality control, and getting back to basics around meeting our maintenance standards as well as major rehabilitation projects and heavy volume stations. I have directed a follow-up assessment this spring to measure our progress. Operating more efficiently will continue to be a focus for us throughout the agency, particularly as it is related to the operating budget. Management's proposed FY12 budget focuses on continuing the progress of the past year and funding current service levels so that Metro remains an economic engine helping to drive the region's economic recovery. However, I want to point out that our ability to operate our core services as well as continue safety and reliability improvements through rebuilding our infrastructure and equipment depends upon adequate funding. As Mr. Benjamin noted in committee this month, there are a number of unpalatable choices yet before you to fund the operating budget. And as Ms. Hutchins said, in a time of scarce resources and great needs, it is vital that Metro efficiently and effectively expend the investments that we have been given by the jurisdictions to ensure capital improvements are made effectively. We are putting the right management and tools in place to aggressively implement our capital program, the largest and most aggressive since the system was built. But let me be absolutely clear that this is only the base level of investment required to ensure safety and reliability of this now aging system. As Congress and the jurisdictions consider different budget difficult budget decisions, it will be imperative that Metro have a strong voice advocating on behalf of our riders to maintain the $150 million federal contribution in PREA funding and maintain, if not increase, federal formula funding. And in the longer term, to find ways to address the over $5 billion in capital needs around the system. That funding is the lifeblood of our core services, as well as the capital projects that will allow safe and reliable operations for today's passengers and for the next generation of riders. Congress needs to understand clearly the vital role Metro plays in the region's economic viability and quality of life. I also want to briefly address how we intend to improve service for our customers. To ensure that we are handling customer questions and comments in a way that gives meaningful input to our operations while meeting our customers' needs, we are launching an independent assessment of our call center. We are also going to establish the transit version of a secret shopper program to improve our accountability and customer service on board and in stations. And we will take some simple steps to unravel idiosyncrasies in the system that benefit our customers, such as creating the virtual tunnel connection between the Farragut North and Farragut West stations to make transfers easier for riders. As you know, we are seeking a business partner to help us design the next generation of smart fare payment technology to expand customer choices and make riding the system more convenient with debit, credit, and federal ID cards, as well as other chip-enabled payment methods. Importantly, we are also preparing for the opening of the Dulles extension. Bus service will benefit from new technology that integrates fare box, destination signage, and next bus systems to improve our reliability and customer information delivery. And we will begin to work in certain priority bus corridors that will deliver faster travel times for bus customers. Additionally, I look forward to working with the District of Columbia on potential bus rapid transit service improvements, such as curb running and signal preference to make bus service even more attractive, efficient, and an even more powerful antidote to traffic congestion. While we will continue to celebrate milestones in our path to progress, it is equally important to identify areas that are not meeting our standards, where we will intensify management focus and identify new business solutions. For example, we need to improve logistics to ensure budget-efficient and timely availability of parts. Importantly, the historic workforce deficit that has created a critical shortage of bus and train operators, as well as dependence on overtime, will be addressed to ensure the continuation of core services. Equally important is attracting the best and the brightest experienced and credentialed professionals in our industry to fill key management vacancies so that our leadership team is strong and communicates better internally and with our customers. And while extraordinary growth and demand for paratransit service is not unique to Metro Access, in the current economic climate, it is essential that we consider new ways of managing our costs while providing this vital service. Moving Metro forward will require all of us working together every day to rebuild this system and ensure it delivers a safe and reliable service that our customers expect and our region requires to remain economically strong. I look forward to talking with our customers and employees about that hard work, but I will tell you that I was out just a couple of Saturdays ago watching the major track work at Foggy Bottom Station and was proud of the work that our employees are doing. It's the nuts and bolts of rebuilding the system. Seeing the level of effort out there reminded me of Teddy Roosevelt's admonition that it's far better to dare mighty things than to sit idly by and risk nothing, gaining nothing. The entire Metro family of employees is daring mighty things, and I want to take this opportunity today to thank them. And that concludes my remarks. Now, if I may, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move on to recognition of employees. Dave Kubitschek will do that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Sarles. I'm pleased to present today our January employee spotlight. On December 29th, 2010, station managers Antonio Cornegay and Kevin McCormick were stationed at the Franconia Springfield Metro Rail Station when they observed a minor entering the station carrying two rifle bags. As the young man headed towards the fare gates, he was stopped by both station managers who questioned him about the content of these cases. The young man told them that these cases contained merely BB guns. The station managers then advised him that guns were not allowed in the metro system, and he had to find another way of transporting his contents. Mr. McCormick convinced the young man to leave the station, and while he was exiting through the bus bay, Metro Transit police officers entered the station and were informed of the situation by the station managers. The officers then followed the young man and stopped him in the bus bay in the area of the Metro Rail station. He was still carrying the two bags over his shoulder. Upon searching the young man, the officers also found a handgun with its serial number filed off, a 12-gauge shotgun, a 22-caliber rifle, a 44 Magnum, and a variety of ammunition. The individual was taken into custody without incident and initially charged with carrying a concealed weapon before being turned over to the Fairfax County Police. Throughout the entire incident, at no time were Metro's customers in danger, thanks to the alert observations and vigilance of the station managers, Mr. McCormick and Mr. Cornegay, who observed the customer carrying these cases and acted in the best interest of the safety for Metro's customers and staff. These dangerous weapons are off the streets. This is an example of how we play a vital role in the security of the Metro system, and if you see something, you should say something. Mr. McCormick and Mr. Cornegay, I invite you to please join me in the center of the room with Mr. Sarles and our chairman of the board for a presentation and photograph.
I see Mr. DiBernardo getting ready. Our next item is a report by the Riders Advisory Council by Frank DiBernardo. I did want to congratulate you, Mr. DiBernardo, on being reelected as chair of the Riders Advisory Council. You have done an absolutely incredible job in leading that group over the last year, and look forward to you doing the same thing for at least another year.
Well, thank you very much. I look forward to the opportunity. For the benefit of the new members, I'd just like to give a brief introduction of myself. My name is Frank DiBernardo, and I have served on the Riders Advisory Council since February of 2009. Last year, I was elected chair for 2010, and at the January meeting, my colleagues graciously and perhaps foolishly reelected me, and I'm honored to be able to serve. I commute daily from my home in Greenbelt, Maryland, by bus, rail, and bus to my office in Mount Rainier, Maryland, where I serve as the executive director of New Ways Ministry, which is a national Catholic organization that works for justice and equality for lesbian, gay people in church and society. I'd like to just digress a little from my prepared remarks to tell you about an email that I received today from one of the Riders Advisory Council members describing the another timely event, yet last night's snow. He wrote to me saying, because of last night's snow and road conditions, it took 45 minutes to go 1 mile from Pentagon to the Navy Annex. Along the way, we passed at least 10 stalled buses, and in fact, my bus accidentally struck another stalled bus. Through it all, our driver was fearless and selfless. Please tell the board that on a day like yesterday, Metro bus drivers earned the trust and respect of us riders. As I walked with the throngs down Columbia Pike trying to get home, that steady stream of pedestrians was a reminder of how many people Metro moves every day. Metro bus drivers risked their own safety to get us riders home. All the Metro employees who get up and go out in treacherous conditions to get us to and from work deserve a heartfelt dose of thanks from us riders. Additionally, I've heard several stories this morning from other riders, council members who talked about how clean the approaches to Metro rail stations were. So we want to give our deep gratitude to the employees during these tough conditions. On January 3rd, the Riders' Council hosted a committee meeting on the subject of the recently instituted random bag inspections. The meeting was attended by over 100 people, our largest ever, who were overwhelmingly opposed to the new inspection procedure. The Riders Advisory Council requests that the board halt the current program for random bag inspection because of significant unanswered questions about the program, its potential intrusion on civil liberties, and a lack of meaningful public discussion before implementation. We request that the board direct senior Metro staff to undertake a further comprehensive examination of the program, analyzing its effectiveness as a deterrent against terrorism in general, and in particular, from the context of public concern about civil liberties. The review should also examine the program in light of other pressing public safety needs currently unaddressed, such as improving police response time and increasing police presence on trains and buses and in stations. There should be broad public participation in this examination, including at least one public hearing, consultation with the Riders Council, and dialogue with civil liberties organizations and other relevant groups. The Council also recommends that the Board clarify its guidance to the General Manager to emphasize that he has authority to implement a program such as this in the event of specific credible threats, but that Board approval is required before initiating such programs in the absence of such threats or continuing them beyond a set period of time. Last month, the Council, in December, approved its report on WMATA governance and presented it to the Board. I would like to take this opportunity to thank the Board for its quick response in establishing a governance committee to review the recommendations from both the Council's and the Council of Government's Board of Trades report. And we look forward to working with the Board as it conducts its own governance examination. Finally, let me inform you that the Riders Advisory Council held elections for 2011 at the January meeting. As I've already mentioned, my colleagues graciously gave me the opportunity to serve another year as chair, and three jurisdictional vice chairs were also elected. Chris Farrell was elected as the Maryland vice chair. Penny Everline as the Virginia Vice Chair, and David Alpert was reelected as the District of Columbia's Vice Chair. I look forward to working with all of you and Metro staff over the coming year to build on the progress that has been made in improving the Metro system for all its riders. I'm happy to answer any questions that you have, and my colleague David Alpert is available to answer any specific questions about the BAG program. He very skillfully and fairly chaired the meeting and shepherded the writing of the resolution. So I thought it would be helpful if you had questions that they be directed to him.
Are there comments, questions for the Riders Advisory Council? Ms. Porter?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am very happy to see that the Riders Advisory Council has been has discussed this issue and has given us a recommendation, which I think the board is going to deal with in a minute. And let me say, I also have some concerns about this policy. And let me just be very clear what my concerns are. I think there is no one on this board who is not concerned about the security of the system, myself included. I think that's one of our paramount responsibilities, and I take that very seriously. At the same time, I think that just because something is classified as security, doesn't mean that we shouldn't look at other aspects of it also. I think one of the more important things that this organization needs to do is to balance contributions to the security of the system of a particular proposal to its intrusiveness, as well as to other ways the same resources could be allocated and what level of security that might offer. For example, I would very much like to see additional Metro police officers roaming through the system and looking out for crime, looking out for suspicious persons or suspicious bags. The other concern that I have about this is, and of course I was not on the board at the time that that this was announced, but I think that the suggestion that this should have been preceded by more public discussion is something that I would agree with, and I would hope that in the future, when there's something that is going to have a significant impact on Metro's relationship with its riders, that there is some public discussion before it is considered. Thank you.
Mr. Wells.
Mr. Chair, I want to thank the Ridership Advisory Council for the very thoughtful work on this. And that as a board, that already there's been a lot of discussion about trying to be sure that we incorporate the feedback from Riders Advisory Council because of your expertise, but also the regional representation that you represent and the thoughtfulness for participating for free in this activity. And so while as a board, a new board member, but clear with my colleagues that is our job to be sure that we protect our riders and that we have a safe Metro system, preferably continue to be the safest Metro system in the world. But that to be balanced with our relationship and responsibility to our ridership, that we're transparent, that we communicate with each other, that there's a clear role for feedback for the board to consider and for us to be able to hold the performance of our general manager to being sure that our general manager or CEO, whatever we're calling him today, is responsive to you, the ridership. And so, Mr. Chair, I would move that the board receive the report and that we assign the results and the report to the Committee on Customer Service and Customer Service and Operations Committee to review the report and to provide back recommendations to the full board in being able to officially review the report and to make comments.
So you'd like a more fulsome discussion and have that in?
I want to be sure that the board officially receives the report, assigns it within our process to a committee, and that the committee report back to the board, but also that the committee, on behalf of the board, engage the Writers Advisory Council in considering the recommendations.
Okay. That was moved by Mr. Wells, seconded by Ms. Hutchins. Are there any comments on the motion? If not, all in favor say, wait a minute. Mr. Downey, I'm sorry.
Could comment later or?
Go ahead, now.
Yeah, I just wanted to add my thanks to the advisory committee for raising this topic, for discussing it at great length. I think it is important that we engage with the riders, with the customers, with the employees about safety and security, and especially security within the system. It's an issue that affects all of us. Some very difficult decisions have to be made. I have great confidence in professional and technical people within the authority in making those judgments, in balancing how we operate, but I think we can always talk about how to do it better, how to do it more effectively, how to avoid the tragic consequences that would occur if there were a terrorist event inside the system. Those events have happened in lots of other places. They've happened with hundreds of deaths. 25% of all terrorist attacks around the world have been at surface public transportation systems, which are places where open access is provided to all and must be provided to all, but the risk is equally large that we have all those people within the system, and I believe they deserve our protection. They deserve a variety of methods. They deserve attention, and they need to be part of the system. They need to be part of our protection, and we do need to communicate with them. I'd also ask, Mr. Chairman, that the letter we received from MetroRiders.org be made part of this record in terms of their reaction to this, which is somewhat different from what we've heard from the Riders Advisory Council.
So ordered. Ms. Hines.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do want to comment on, I very much support Mr. Wall's motion. I think this is good, and I do want to thank the group for the thoughtfulness of the report and also the thoughtfulness of the meeting. I snuck in and sat in the back and so was there and had a chance to really experience the flavor and the range of concerns that folks had. I wanted to just comment on one piece of some of the testimony we heard before you came up to the mic, Mr. DiBernardo, about the board's role and the board's autonomy, because I think that is important. This is the third board I've served on, the third general manager or superintendent or county manager that I have had the opportunity to work with. And on each of the boards, there is always a conversation about where the line is and what we delegate to the manager. And part of my understanding is that the board, in fact, delegated this area to the manager as an area of decision making, which is an appropriate decision for a board to make. And I think that moving forward in the spirit of being the team that I believe we have the potential to be, that is a conversation that will need to continue. And it perhaps is a conversation where we need to be somewhat clearer with our riders about where we have decided to make that line. Just as I didn't want to be woken at 4 o'clock in the morning when the superintendent was deciding whether school was going to start or not, I do think there are areas where we as elected persons or as appointed persons have far less expertise and far less ability to make what is the key decision. Doesn't mean we shouldn't have good conversation ahead of time, doesn't mean the public shouldn't understand. But in the end, the decision has to be made, and some are best made by a single person rather than a board. So I just offer that today and hope that in our customer service conversation, we will explore where those lines ought to be as we move forward.
Thank you, Ms. Hines. Ms. Hewlett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. DiBernardo. I, too, would like to thank the Riders Advisory Council for their very thoughtful process and the thoughtful report that you've submitted, and congratulations to you on your reelection. I actually support the motion to send this to the Customer Service Committee, but I would like to just make sure that it's couched to not just entertain the Riders Advisory Council report and the Metro Riders report as well, which is different. But I think we're all sort of grappling with this issue. We all have an interest in protecting civil liberties, and we're trying to strike the appropriate balance. We have a responsibility. We have a concern for our customers. We have a tremendous concern for safety, and yet we're concerned about civil liberties too, and we're struggling with what's the appropriate balance. And so, you know, we may have some individual thoughts. I would like, if it's going to this committee, not just for consideration of this report, but to entertain all of our thoughts and comments. And I know that may be implicit in the motion, but I think it needed to be stated on the record clearly that, you know, we have issues. I have the utmost respect for law enforcement. I have the utmost respect for our chief. And, you know, you're privy to information. But I think we're all struggling with the appropriate balance. So I'd like, if we're going to send it, then send it to entertain all of our comments so that we can hopefully come up with the appropriate response.
Mr. McKay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm obviously not voting on this as an alternate, but I do feel compelled to speak up because I, one, appreciate the RAC's comments. I think they're very good, and the time that was given and the thought that was given is very much appreciated. That being said, I completely agree with the authority that we gave the general manager this in the last board. I think it's appropriate. The truth here is that we have a no-win situation. If we do this, we get blamed by some folks. If we don't do it and the unthinkable happens, we get blamed by some folks. So the truth is we need to, one, have confidence in the professionals who oversee our safety in this system. As Ms. Hewlett said, they have information that none of us are privy to. I don't agree with the assertion that there's not a credible threat. Frankly, I don't know. That's other people's job to know that. And they have intelligence that's not readily available to the public. And darn it, when they tell me that there's a threat, I'm going to believe them, because I don't know otherwise. And the truth is, fundamental in our responsibility is to protect our passengers. And the folks who play the lead role in doing that is our police chief and our general manager, chief executive officer. And that's the reason why we gave them the authority to do this. Was it done perfectly? Perhaps not. Can we continue to communicate and bring this issue up in committees? Perhaps we should and we can. But the truth is, we're not always going to have the luxury of doing that. We have to be realistic. Threats come and go. When our public safety professionals pick up on some information and immediately need to put something into action to protect our lives, we ought to let them do it. And I know that may not be everyone's opinion. It's a tough thing to come to that conclusion. We have to balance a whole lot of things here. But I can't stress enough that in the law enforcement community, there's information that is not available to the public. And we need not second guess by making this motion. And I want to make clear, because the board has discussed this and the intention of the motion is to begin to continue to have a conversation about the implementation components of this. It is not to second guess a security threat or a public safety concern that's been brought to our attention, but rather to talk about the implementation and the communication components of doing this in the long term. And I think that's an appropriate discussion to have, both from a customer standpoint, customer safety standpoint, and customer service standpoint. But I, for one, stand firmly in the category of individuals who rely on our public safety and our law enforcement community to understand what a credible threat is. And if they tell me there's a credible threat and they say they need to stand up an additional operation, I have a moral and ethical responsibility to the people I serve to do what I can to protect them from the unthinkable. And that's an imperfect situation to begin with. We need not make that more imperfect.
Mr. Downs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm actually not going to ask a question about bags. I want to thank the RAC for its active participation in the discussion and deliberations around governance. I want to ask the RAC, at least personally, to stay directly involved in the debates as we move through with the board's governance committee, those actions. I want to encourage you to be willing to be critical when you think you need to be critical about decisions the board may be taking about governance, and to be a participant with not only the Board of Trade, but the General Accounting Office, which you mentioned in your report, about not only the steps that they've recommended, but together what can be an agreement of interested parties about the steps that we as a board should be taking going forward about governance. Our commitment, I think, without reservation, is to do our best to improve the governance of the authority at the board level, and we consider you a partner in that process.
Thank you. We have before us a motion and a second to continue to the discussion of the issue of bag checks before and in the Customer Service and Operations Committee. Is there any other discussion, or are we ready for a vote? Seeing no other discussion, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. This one also passes. This brings us to presentations to former board members. Jim Graham has been sitting there incredibly patiently over on the side as we go through these very, very long speeches. And I do want to note for the newer members of our board that we don't normally have this large number of extensive speeches, and you can expect board meetings to be a little bit more focused and shorter. But we did not have the opportunity at our last board meeting, because we didn't know what the timing would be, to really thank Jim Graham for his service on this board. Now, Jim, I have before me a Metro Pylon that we're going to give you, and it thanks you for your service from 1999 to 2010, 11 years, probably 12, actually, from beginning to end, which is an incredibly long time to be dedicated to and devoted to this authority and what this authority does. And absolutely nobody will not say that Jim has been active and involved. I mean, he is a person who has been involved in every decision, in every step of the way, because it's been important to him and it has been critical to him that this authority do what he believes is the right thing for this region. And in so doing, Jim, you have profoundly influenced this authority and will never be the same without you. You've made an enormous difference in who we are, what we are, and where we're going. You have been a champion for transit-oriented development in looking at those things that can be done to really make the stations more effective and our ability to transport people better. And in being a champion, there has been nobody who's been more of a champion for those who are less fortunate, particularly when we're doing fare decisions. So Mr. Graham has been one of those people who has cared about those people, has cared about our riders, and has made an enormous difference. And Jim, if you could come up here to the center, I'd like to present you with a token of our appreciation.
Well, this award renders me almost speechless. 12 years is a long time, as I found, and it was a full 12 years. And I heard many, many words spoken in this particular chamber, and I probably said a few myself. I am disinclined to contribute more to that today, but I really do want to very sincerely say what a privilege it has been to be part of this great deliberative body and this very important public service. And I do want to say to the board, most particularly to my successor, Councilmember Wells, to the new general manager, and to all of you who are stakeholders in making this work right, I wish you Godspeed in making all of this better for all of us. Thank you very much.
You also have before you a resolution. We have two vacancies in the Riders Advisory Council. And before you is a resolution to I think the microphone has decided that we've had enough. Before you is a resolution to appoint Stephen Claremont as a representative of the Commonwealth of Virginia and Joseph Kitchen as a representative of the state of Maryland. I'll entertain a motion to approve those appointments.
So
moved by Ms. Hudgens, second by Ms. Hewlett. Any comment? Any questions? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? No. This one passes as well. This brings us to, actually, before we start, Mr. Downey wanted to comment very briefly on the safety and security meeting today. Mr. Downey.
Not able to hold that meeting today. This is an important committee, and we feel its work is important to the authority. We felt the work of the staff in recovering from last night's snowstorm and getting ready for this morning's rush hour service was far more important. But we will roll over the discussion regarding progress on safety. We have a report that really identifies major steps that are being taken, and we'll take that up next month.
In the absence of the chair of the Customer Service and Operations Committee, I'll do the report for Customer Service and Operations. The first item is selection of a name for the DC Village bus facility. The committee did forward a name suggested, but since that time and in the discussion, we did hear that the District of Columbia had some concerns about that and wanted to potentially change it. So what you have before you is a new resolution. This resolution would name this facility the Shepherd Parkway Bus Facility. And I so move. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Wells. Any comments on the naming of the bus facility, the Shepherd Parkway Bus Facility? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Okay, our second item is a recommendation on the payphone program in this one. Many people now seem to have cell phones, and so our payphones are not a very effective way of people communicating. However, we do believe that we need to have TTY communications available at the entrances to our station. So what this does is remove our regular program, which has actually come to an end for cell phones, and replace it with a smaller program with TTYs at the entrance to our stations. I move this item. Is there a second? There we go. Okay. Any comments or questions? All in favor, say aye. Aye. Opposed, no. That brings us to other actions. The first one is approval to initiate and reward and award contracts for the repair of damaged rail cars. It has been moved by Ms. Hudgens, seconded by Ms. Hewlett. Any questions or comments on this item?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Downs. And let me just check who else asked there. Okay. Okay, thank you.
I noticed one of the cars being repaired is a Series 1000 car, and the useful life is a maximum of 4 years, since that's the target date for the replacement of the Series 1000. I was wondering, because it was not listed as either a severe damage or a light damage, the rationale for rebuilding a 1000 series car as against the option of using that money as an increment on an additional car on the new car order.
Our plan going forward is to have the opportunity to do a little bit further in-depth review of the actual structural integrity. On our rail cars, we have a married pair configuration where one is an A and the other one is a B. So what we're looking at is to determine if this car is worth repairing. And then if it was, then we would be able to restore two cars. If not, then we would move forward towards the 7K process.
Just to clarify, basically, if it's relatively minor damage, then it's worth putting the money in. But if it's major damage, then we're going to, as provided for in the item, look to replace it with a 7,000 series car.
Mr. Chairman?
Ms. Hines?
I may be asking the same question again, so if I am, I apologize. There's when I look at this chart that you have included in the item, we've got a column that says total loss. I took that to be totaled. Is that what it means?
What we did is we did, if you look at the bottom of it, that's four vehicles that we know that are damaged beyond repair.
Okay. So then when I move down into the next paragraph, Mr. Kubicek, below that chart, the last part of the last line of that paragraph says, 3,000 series car damaged beyond repair totaled will be replaced as part of the new rail car procurement should repair or the cost to repair not be feasible. And therein lies my confusion. Either they're totaled or they're repairable, but I don't see how they're both.
Again, at this point in time, what we're we need to do further review and evaluation of their overall status. And then once we have that completed, if it looks like we have value left in it, then we would make repairs. If not, then we would replace in kind.
So total loss is not actually the final definitive word on these four cars. They are not totaled.
If I can clarify, Mr. Kubicek, could I? The reason why we're using the term is because we're in negotiations with our insurance program. Mm-hmm. And as a result, we'd like to retain some rights in terms of negotiating that. The insurance programs may have a different definition of the total loss versus what Mr. Kubicek is going to be looking at over time. So that's why it's listed here as the total loss. But there are some pending negotiations happening with our adjusters, insurance adjusters.
And so the $8 million that we have coming is related to the two columns that are minor damage, significant damage, and you're still talking about the first column that says total loss. Is that?
The total insurance recovery that you see here, the $8 million, $8,053,000, is the insurance recovery. And the value that you see here for this action includes all three columns, the total loss, the significant, and the other damage.
So there. But the final amount of insurance payment has not been settled.
Has not been totally settled. That's correct.
Thank you.
Mr. Yule.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Following question with regards to the
repairs of these damaged cars, what, as a result of the accidents that happened in the yard, what measures have been put in place to prevent and minimize future actions?
What we have done on this is that we've went through a re-instruction process. We've aligned some of our supervisors during our pull-in period, reinforcing also how we stage our equipment. One of the things that caused this incident is that the individual did not properly stop their vehicle upon approach. And so not only has this been addressed in this respective yard, but all of the yards that we have within the entire agency.
Thank you.
Are we prepared to vote? I did want to note that the reason that you have this on blue sheets that modifies it a little bit is the resolution that has been added to the end of it. By receiving the funding for insurance, we are increasing the size of our capital program, and the resolution just moves the total for our capital program up by the $8 billion that we receive as additional revenues. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Next item, approval to increase the contract authority for the Metro Access Class Action Settlement Data Expert Report. May I have a motion to approve this item? Ms. Hudgens moves. Is there a second? Ms. Hewlett seconds. Are there any? Oh, I'm sorry. It was okay. Mr. Costa did it. Seconded. I'm sorry. Are there any comments on this one? Without comments, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. This one passes. The next item is approval to amend the personnel manual regarding excess hours worked. I would like to make my own comment on this one before we move forward on it. This is an example of one of those things that I think is not really a policy decision. And that we have, in fact, delegated to the CEO. But apparently, in prior resolutions from years gone by, this particular piece has not been fully delegated. So I think we need to clean up those resolutions and make sure that that occurs as soon as possible, rather than having the board approve specific items within a policies and procedures manual. That having been said, are there any other comments? I need a motion to approve. Mr. Downey and a second. Ms. Hewlett. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no.
I don't abstain on that, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Hines abstains. Could you so record it? All right. Which brings us to remarks by the outgoing chairman. Yet one more speech. This is my chance to say whatever I want to say. Okay. This has been a year of change for Metro. The tragic rail accident of June 22, 2009, which took the lives of one rail operator and eight passengers, as well as injuring scores of passengers, was a turning point. Over the next months, we also lost four other rail employees in accidents on the system. All of us at Metro mourn the loss of lives, the injuries suffered, the families which have to cope without loved ones or with the aftermath of injuries. But something else happened with these events. We lost our innocence. We had been like adolescents. We felt we were invulnerable. Our system was perfect. We could, after this accident, no longer believe that. We had to make a clear and unambiguous commitment to safety as our number one priority, from every member of the board to every bus and rail operator, station manager, and maintenance employee. We have done that, and we are working to change our organization and culture into one in which safety is the way we live. The National Transportation Safety Board completed an extensive, thorough, and complex investigation of that terrible accident and issued 16 recommendations designed to minimize the possibility of a recurrence of the event. We have committed to implementing all of the NTSB recommendations, dedicating $1 billion in capital funds for that purpose, reorganizing our safety functions within WMATA, and reinforcing whistleblower protections. Within a month of receiving the report, we had completed one NTSB recommendation, strengthening the board commitment to safety, adopting a new mission statement which emphasizes safety, and creating a board safety committee. We also faced leadership challenges as our general manager resigned in the beginning of 2010. We were fortunate to be able to attract Richard Sarles as our extremely capable interim general manager. He took up the challenges we face as a system with an aging infrastructure with skill and insight. And we are very pleased that today we were able to appoint him as our permanent chief executive officer. He's a man of talent and dedication who will serve the authority and the Washington region well over the coming 3 years. For the first time since the founding of WMATA this year, we added 4 board positions to our governance structure, with the first 2 federal appointees joining us in early 2010. These excellent new members have enriched the board and have added to the quality of our decisions. As we administered the oath of office today to 4 new board members, we began historic changes in the board membership, and we look forward to the different ideas and perspectives that our new colleagues will bring. Several organizations are suggesting changes in Metro's governance to further enhance our policymaking capability. We shall explore those proposals carefully and thoughtfully because we want to do everything we can to enhance our organization and its ability to serve the public. For the 3rd budget year in a row, we face financial challenges as the local jurisdictions deal with the loss of tax revenues due to a stagnant economy and are unable to increase their subsidy contributions to Metro as much as we would all desire. The economic decline has impacted ridership on bus and rail, constraining revenue growth and adding to the budget pressures. At the same time, our aging infrastructure requires substantial investments in rehabilitation and replacement. As we begin that process, we face the reduced reliability associated with older equipment and inconveniences to riders as we replace or repair equipment and right-of-way. Despite our financial challenges, we are making progress. While many other transit systems throughout the country were forced to reduce service, we were able to avoid service cuts and are carrying 1.3 million passenger trips each day. We've ordered new rail cars to replace the oldest ones in the fleet. Many of our buses are new, reducing delays due to breakdowns. We are focusing on escalator and right-of-way maintenance to enhance passenger movement and safety. A rail extension to Dulles Airport is under construction, managed by the Airports Authority. We are introducing more convenient ways for our passengers to pay fares. But most important, we are focusing on safety and service to our customers because we realize that our job is not to run buses and trains, it is to move people. We operate safe, reliable, and effective transit service in our region in order to provide mobility for the region's residents and for visitors to the nation's capital from across the country and around the world. We are the premier transit system in the United States. Thank you for the opportunity to serve you as chair for the last year.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for your comments, Mr. Benjamin. But most importantly, thank you for your leadership. Mr. Benjamin comes to this board with many, many years of service to WMATA and transit. He has given the same dedication as chair as he has given to his career commitment as a transit worker. So I would like to extend on behalf of the board our thank you for your service. One thing that can be noted, this has been a year of change, and I think it takes skill, dedication, and respect in order to manage through change, and you've done a great job at it. I want to remove this plastic here and ask you to stand.
and accept this gavel that recognizes your service of 2010 as chair. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much.
We do have a set of interim board committee, interim board procedures that we need to look at. I'm going to ask Ms. Hudgens to explain the change in the board procedures which are before you.
Thank you, Mr. Benjamin. Before you, you have resolution and the 2011 interim procedures. They are designated interim procedures because two things are very important. First of all, we have four new members on this board, and some of our procedures would help in terms of them becoming accustomed here. But we have one significant change that is to be noted, and that is in item three under the election of board officers, in which we have deleted the statement regarding the rotation of the jurisdictional members there. In deleting this statement, it is an opportunity for us to look at holistically those members that serve on this board, including the federal members. And it also will give us a chance during the governance committee to address the concerns that were raised through our Board of Trade work government, the WMATA governance work group, and the Writers Advisory Council regarding that issue. It allows us to have full discussion, but to move forward in electing a member from the federal side as a vice chair or at any member at this time to the board. The other items that are listed relate to the organization of the committees. I noted interim because we have now six standing committees, including the governance committee. We are making no changes to those committees at this time, other than making them committees of the whole. And committees of the whole give us an opportunity to work on all of the areas. But again, we will review the committee structure as we move forward and looking at the recommendations of governance on bylaws versus procedures. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would move the approval of the interim board procedures for 2011.
And is there a second?
Second.
A second by Ms. Hewlett. Any comments or questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. This brings us to our election of officers. Our first office to be filled is chairman. Are there nominations for chair of the board?
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Hines.
It's my great pleasure to nominate Kathy Hudgens to become the chairman of the board.
Is there a second?
I second the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Downs. Any comment or question? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. Congratulations, Ms. Hudgens. And we'll move a little bit farther to vice chair. Are there nominations for vice chair?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Wells.
I'd like to nominate Tom Downs as vice chairman of the board, and I do feel compelled to note that this is the anniversary of Mr. Downs first serving on this great board of, I believe, 30 years ago. And so it's with great confidence of experience and wisdom that I nominate him to this position on behalf of all of us. So with that, I nominate Tom Downs.
Thank you. I'm not sure that I would characterize it that way if he actually comes back. Is there a second?
Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to second that.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. And finally, our second vice chairman. Is there a nomination for second vice chairman?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. I would like to nominate my colleague, Mort Downing, as second vice chairman of the board.
Thank you, Mr. Costa, and I second that nomination. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Then that passes also, and the gavel now passes to Ms. Hudgens.
Thank you. thank you very much. I want to say thank you to my colleagues for their recognition and commitment to my service here. I look forward to working with you. I am not going to give you speeches at this time, but I would take the opportunity to do so in February. I am excited in taking the position. Following Mr. Benjamin, who I think has done a really great job of managing the great deal of change that we've gone through, and I think we will have an opportunity for an exciting journey with our new members, with our new general manager, and I think a lot of opportunities as we talk about governance and the way that we as a board will be serving. So I look forward to sharing my comments in detail next month. With that, I think we'll go to the next item, and the next item is the approval of the interim 2011 board committee assignments. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Second. With moved and second, is there a discussion? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And opposed? The item is approved. The next is the report of the jurisdictions. Mr. Downs, is there a report from DC?
This is the only time that I will do a non-traditional jurisdiction report. As my fellow board member and council member, Tommy Wells, acknowledged that it was almost 30 years ago today that I first sat down here, and the board was struggling with the fact that it had a rail system to build, that it only had enough money for 75 miles of the system. The local jurisdictions, the two states, the District of Columbia, and the Congress were struggling with how to finish the system. The only thing that got us to the final funding agreements was the unanimous shoulder-to-shoulder stance that all three jurisdictions took to their congressional delegations and to the Hill to help craft a funding solution that built this final system that we're now trying to maintain. There is nothing more important, I think, from the district's perspective than the defense of the $150 million a year of federal commitment to help rebuild this system. Our jurisdiction pledges to be an equal partner with all three jurisdictions in our congressional delegation and trying to convince the White House as well of the need for the completion of that $1.5 billion commitment, because without it, we will fail.
Well said. Thank you. From the Northern Virginia Transportation Commission, I have no report, and I don't think my colleagues have any comments. Thank you. And from the federal government, Mr. Downs.
No report.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry, the WSTC, Mr. Benjamin.
No report, Madam Chair.
Very good. I've covered you all. Okay. That is the last item for the meeting. The meeting is adjourned. There's no other business to come before us. Hearing none, we are adjourned. Okay. Thank you. Thank you.